Tough. So see the Mem Hey, we discussed a mamzer or the child of an Ivid and a Jew. Is it a mamzer or not? And at the very end of the daf, there was a short discussion of what is how certain tefillot can make you a gil. And that's the topic of today's daf, basically. So bottom of the hand with bet. So if you buy a slave from a non-Jew, so when you buy a slave, you need to immerse him in the mikveh. And he accepts slavery upon himself, and then he becomes a slave, and he's partially Jewish, he's chayav mitzvot like a woman. So if you buy a slave from a non-Jew, and you're about to take him to the mikveh, v'kadam v'tabal shem ben chorin, but that slave, before you have a chance to immerse him in the mikveh, he himself goes to the mikveh, and immerses himself for the purpose of being a free Jew, kanat shem ben chorin, so that is effect, it takes effect, and he is now free, and he is not your slave, halachically. My tama, why is that? Oved kochavim gufa lo kanirei. A non-Jew cannot own another non-Jew's body. He can own his labor, but not his body. So when the Jew buys a slave from the non-Jew, and it's a non-Jew slave, so he's only buying the labor. He's not actually buying the body of the slave yet until he immerses him in the mikveh. And since this person, the slave, before he could be turned into a halachically Jewish slave, he first went to the mikveh and became a Jew, then that removes his obligations towards his new master. So it turns out that these three things have the ability to remove shabud if there's some property or some item that's mishuabad for a loan or something. Then if you're maktishet, or if it becomes chametz on Pesach, or if it's a slave that's freed, then it loses the shabud. Matu v'chis, Rav Chisda brought a contradiction to the statement by Rav. Maaseh beBloria Agiyoret. So there's a story of Bloria the convert. Shekadmu avadeh v'tavlu lefaneha. That some of her slaves went and immersed themselves in the mikveh before she did. V'amaseh lifnei chachamim v'amu kanu asma b'nei chorin. And chachamim said they managed to free themselves by becoming Jews before they became slaves. So the Gemara's medayik from this braita. Lefanei necheh alo. Davka, because they immersed themselves in the mikveh before she herself was Jewish, did it succeed. In other words, Bloria was still a non-Jew with slaves, and then her slaves went and immersed themselves in the mikveh, so they freed themselves. But if Bloria had already converted and she was a Jew, then her slaves would not be able to free themselves because they would already be owned, their body would belong to her, and they could no longer free themselves. So it seems contradictory who said that they can, when a Jew buys from a non-Jew, the slaves can free themselves by immersing in a mikveh and becoming Jewish. The diok above was wrong. It's not that after she's converted, they have no way of freeing themselves. Rather, there's a difference between before and after she converted. If they had gone to the mikveh, if the slaves had gone to the mikveh while Bloria was still a non-Jew, then by default, the fact that they immerse themselves in the mikveh is to convert, and they are now free Jews, and that's the end of it. But if they now belong to a Jew, if they were sold to a Jew, or after Bloria already converted, then they can still free themselves if they go to the mikveh and say explicitly that they're immersing of becoming free Jews. But they have to say explicitly, because by default, the immersion is to become halachic slaves. And therefore, of course, they're not free. Fine. What we said above, that the slaves can free themselves by quickly going to the mikveh before they're turned into slaves, is true when you're buying from a non-Jew. But if you buy a non-Jew, not that you buy a slave from a non-Jew. If you buy a non-Jew directly, then he is his body belongs to you directly, and he cannot free himself by immersing in the mikveh. The pasuk says, you will buy from the locals, that is the non-Jews. Atem kunim mehem, you can buy them. V'lohem kunim mekem, v'lohem kunim zedze. But they cannot buy you or each other. So that's why when a non-Jew owns a Jew or another non-Jew, then the ownership is only on his labor. But when a Jew owns a non-Jew, then he owns his body, and he's a complete slave. So this is what the Gemara proves. Lemai, what is this bright referring to when it says you can buy them but they can't buy each other? If we were to interpret the bright discussing their labor, could it be that a non-Jew cannot even own a Jew's labor? Right, the full pasuk is if you're if a fellow Jew becomes poor and has to be sold into a non-Jew, so the Torah says there is a situation where a Jew works for a non-Jew. So of course a non-Jew can buy a Jew's labor. So we have to say this right is referring to buying the bodies, ownership over someone's body. So the Torah says, a non-Jew cannot own a Jew, but a Jew can own a non-Jew even before he's immersed in a non-Jew and turned him into a halachic slave. So Ravacha contradicted this proof. It's possible that this Braita is referring to a non-Jew becoming a slave after you immerse him in the mikveh. It doesn't say anywhere in the Braita that simply by acquiring him he becomes your slave. Kasha, you're right, there's no proof. Fine. Continuing this discussion of immersing slaves to make them halachic slaves, Amar Shmuel, v'tzrich takfo b'mayim. If you're afraid that the slave will declare that he is immersing himself in order to become a free Jew, then the solution is, while he's in the water, in the mikveh, then do some act that proves that he is serving you. So as the following story demonstrates, Menimin was the slave of Ravashi, and he wanted to immerse him in the mikveh to make him a halakhic slave, so he'd accept mitzvot like women. So he gave him to Ravina and Ravacha, and he said to them, you should know that you're responsible for him. If he manages to escape, you owe me a new slave. So Ravina and Ravacha put a collar around the slave's neck. And when he entered the mikveh, so they loosened it, and then they immediately tightened it again. So he had to loosen it so that the water would reach all his whole body and there wouldn't be chatzitza. But then they closed it again, so he wouldn't be able to say, I'm actually going to make that because I want to free myself. Fine. And then the moment he raised his head out of the water, they gave him a bucket full of clay, and take this to your master. In other words, they immediately showed that he was still a slave. Good. Amr Rav Papa l'Rava. Chazei mar hani debei Rav Papa, debei Papa Baraba. So Rav Papa said to Rava, have you seen those from the household of Papa Baraba? De'avei zuzei le'in shelechagaihu. That they free people, right? So there was a law that people had to pay a poll tax. That the fact you exist means you have to pay the king a tax. And people who couldn't pay became slaves of the king. So Papa Baraba would free these people, these non-Jews, and pay their taxes for them. So now, technically, the king transfers their servitude from him to Papa Rabba, who paid their taxes for them. So the question is, Papa Rabba obviously doesn't want them. Does he need to free them or with his proper get or not? In other words, have these non-Jews that he paid their taxes for them become his halachic slaves, or not his halachic, has he gained ownership over their bodies or not? So if Rava said, it's good you asked me this before I did, I could not answer this question. Their signatures, these people's signatures, are in the king's treasury. In other words, all these people belong to the king because they're his subjects. And the king decreed, whoever doesn't pay taxes will belong to whoever does pay taxes. So these people who do not pay taxes and Papa Baraba paid for them, the king transfers ownership of them to Baba Rabba, and therefore they belong to him and they're his slaves, and he has to free them. Fine. Rabbi Baraba ikla legavla. So Rabbi Baraba came to a place called Gavla. And he saw that there were some Jewish girls who were pregnant from converts who had done Brit Milah but hadn't gone to the mikveh as part of their conversion. And a second phenomenon that he saw was Jews drinking wine, Jewish wine, made by Jews, but that was poured by a non-Jew. And a third problematic thing, v'chaza tumusin de'shalkei ovdei kochavim ve'achlei Yisrael. And he saw them eating tumusin, lupin, that non-Jews had cooked and Jews were eating. And Rav Chia didn't say anything to them. But he asked Rabbi Yochanan about these three things. So Rabbi Yochanan said, the correct response to these three things is A, their children are mamzrim, and their wine is a nesach because the non-Jew poured it, and their tumusim are bishle akum, which you're not allowed to eat. Regarding that third point, that's actually not the halacha, but because they're not bnei Torah, so we're machmer with them. We want them to keep halacha, and they're not careful with halacha. So we add an extra chumrot. So the Gemara explains these three rulings. So Rabbi Yochanan follows the pin that we saw on the previous page. That we'll see on the next page. Conversion only works if you also do Brit Milah and also immerse yourself. And since they didn't go to Mikvah, so still non-Jews. And as we learned on previous stuff, a non-Jew who has a child from a Jewish woman, then the child is a mamzer. So Rabbi Yochanan said, these children are mamzerim. Right, as we learned above. So that was the first ruling. Second ruling, so it's an expression. A nazir cannot drink wine. So we say to him, lech lech, go away, go away. Schol schol, go around, go around. Don't come near the vineyard. In other words, we add chumrot and gedarim to distance ourselves from Yisurim. So yei nesach is wine that a non-Jew touches. A non-Jew that touches, who's just pouring wine, he doesn't touch the wine. It's also prohibited as yei nesach, as an extra geder, as a way to distance ourselves from the prohibition. And the third ruling, v'al talmusam shum shule akum, l'fi shenam b'torah. So a simple dirk is, halachically a tumus cooked by a non-Jew would be allowed, but Rabbi Yochanan was being extra machmir with them. But this doesn't fit with the statement of Rav, because Rav says, what has an isur of bishul akum? Only things that could not be eaten raw, that you have to cook. Right, tumus is not eaten raw, and therefore, lechara, according to the basic halacha, it should be prohibited because of bishul akum. So why was this a special chumra for the people of Gavla? So Gemara explains, Rabbi Yochanan k'idach lishna svir alei damar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak mishmei derav kol shein olel shulchan melachim l'chol bo tepat en bo mishushei ovdei kochavim. So there's a different version of Rav's statement that what the foods included in bishul akum is not what's not eaten raw, rather it's what's eaten in a respectable meal that would enter on that would be on a king's table. And tumus is not eaten, you know, at respectable meals, and therefore only because they were not in Torah was Rabbi Yochanan stringent with them and said it's aser because b'shul akum. So that is the base. That's Gemara's excuse to now discuss converting. Fine. So here it goes. Tanu Rabbanan. Ger shemal v'otaval. What happens if a convert did bring milah but he didn't go to the mikveh? That's enough. Because we saw that when our avot left Egypt, they did do bris milah, but they didn't go to mikveh, and yet they were considered Jews for the purpose of Mamad Har Sinai. What if a convert goes to the mikveh and immerses himself for gerut, but doesn't do bris milah? That's also enough. As we see with the women at the zman of Yetzat Mitzrayim, that they obviously didn't do bris milah because they're women. Presumably they did do tefillah, so that must have been enough to be Jews for Mamad Har Sinai. You need to do both. Fine. So now the Gemara wants to discuss what is actually the machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Why does Rabbi Yeshua disagree with Rabbi Elazar and say we can't learn from the men who left Egypt? Why does Rabbi Elazar think you can't learn from the women who left Egypt? So Mark explains, maybe Rabbi Elazar does not want to learn like Rabbi Yeshua, because you can't learn from a case where it's impossible to a case where it is possible. In other words, the reason the women didn't do Brit Milah as part of their converting is because it's not an option. But men who it is possible for, maybe they should. And you can't learn from one to the other. But in this part, we see that Rabbi Elazar does say you can learn Efshar Moshe Efshar. How do we know that Korban Pesach, for generations, not the one done when they left Egypt, has to be brought from Chulin, and you can't bring an animal bought with money of Maser Sheni? We can do Gzar Shavah from Pesach Mitzrayim to Pesach Dorot. Pesach Mitzrayim eno ba'en le'mechulin. Af Pesach Amor b'Dorot en ba'en le'mechulin. So just like the Korban Pesach brought in Egypt was obviously brought from Chulin, because there was no Maser Sheni in Egypt, so too the Korban Pesach brought in future generations has to be brought from Chulin and not Maser Sheni. Amor Rabbi Akiva v'chidinim efshar moshi efshar. So Rabbi Akiva asks on Rabbi Elazar's opinion, how can you compare? In Egypt there was no Maser Sheni, so the fact that they didn't use Maser Sheni doesn't prove that you can't. So Rabbi Elazar does think they can learn Efshar Moshi Efshar. So the Chari should also agree with Rabbi Yeshua. We should learn from the women of Yetzat Mitzrayim. They can convert simply through Tevila. So our answer is So really Rabbi Elazar does not disagree with Rabbi Yeshua. The Mehane, they both agree that just going to the Mikveh is enough for converting. But Rabbi Yeshua does disagree with Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, look, the Avot who left Egypt only went to the mikveh and they didn't do Brit Milah. Sorry, other way around. They only did Brit Milah and they didn't go to the mikveh. But Rabbi Yeshua be'avot na mitvila hava. But Rabbi Yeshua thinks that they did go to the mikveh and therefore we can't learn from them. Minalei, how does Rabbi Yeshua know this? Torah says before Mamad Har Sinai, everyone had to wash their clothes. Now we know that there are a lot of situations of tumah where you need to go to the mikveh and you don't have to wash your clothes. So kavachomer that in places where you do need to launder your clothes, that you need to also wash your body, and therefore it's clear that they did go to the mikveh before Har Sinai, and that was part of their gerut. So Gemara refutes this. Maybe they just wash their clothes to be clean, not as part of a tumah tarah process, and therefore saying, oh, it's kavachomer that they also had to go to the mikveh. It wasn't part of any halachic process. It was just having clean clothes for Ma'amad al Sinai. Pretty logical thing to do. Yeshua had a different source. Right after, during, after Har Sinai, there's Brit Hagenot, where Yeshua throws blood at Am Yisrael, sprinkles blood. And we know that in general in halacha, when you have azah, you have to do a tefillah first. So presumably Am Yisrael did go to the mikveh before Ma'amad al Sinai, and that was part of the goat. Fine. How does Yeshua know that the women who left Egypt did tefillah? It doesn't say there anywhere. It's a svara. Because if they didn't go to the mikveh, what other action could they have done to become Jews? They must have done something. So we assume that they did tefillah. Fine. Says you need both, also tefillah and also milah. So the Gemara says pshita. It's all very nice that we just discussed Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar, but then the day Chachamim said you need both, and obviously we're going to follow Chachamim in this. So why is Rabbi Yochanan a chiddush? Man Chachamim Rabbi Yossi. The chiddush is that it's not all the other rabbis; it's just the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. And even so, Rabbi Yochanan says halacha follows him. The Tanya, Hareish Shavav Amar Malti Vlo Tavalti, Matbilim Oto Uma Bekach. Tver BeYehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says if someone comes and says, "Look, I did Brit Milah as part of my conversion, and I have yet to go to the mikveh, so we immerse them for the purpose of conversion." The Gemara will explain in a minute that Rabbi Yeshua, you have to do Brit Milah for the sake of converting. If you do it for health purposes or for other religions like Islam, then it's not effective, and you have to do something in addition. But Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's enough to do Tevilah, and therefore we don't care if his Brit Milah was improperly or not, as long as now we're immersing him for the purpose of converting. Rabbi Yosef Mer en Rabdilim. Rabbi says, no, we cannot immerse him because we don't know if he did the Brit Milah properly, and you need both. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you can also immerse someone on Shabbos as long as he did the Brit Milah properly. Rabbi Yosef Mer en Rabdilim. You can't immerse someone on Shabbos because the immersion is completing his process of Giyur, and you can't. It's some kind of form of Metakin Man or something that you can't do on Shabbos. So Gemara explains, Amal Mar, Lefichach Matbilim Ger B'Shabbat Pshita. Right, seems obvious that these things go together. So after you've told us that Rabbi Yehuda requires one or the other, either tevilah or milah, so it's obvious that if you've done one properly, we don't need the other. So if you've done milah before Shabbos, of course you're going to make it on Shabbos because it's meaningless immersion. So why does the bright test have to say that? You would have thought Rabbi Yehuda tevilah ikar, tevilah b'shabbat lo dekamatak in gavra. You may have thought that it's not that Rabbi Yehuda says you can do either or. You need davka immersion, which is why we don't care if you did the Brit Milah properly, but you have to immerse yourself properly. And therefore it is, has a halachic meaning, and it's metakin gavra, which is not allowed on Shabbos. Kamash malan, the Rabbi Yehuda oha oha. So the chiddush of the Brita is, Rabbi Yehuda needs either milah them properly, or immersion them properly, to convert you to Judaism. Rabbi Yosef Mer Enverim, Rabbi Yosef says, you can't come make fun on Shabbos, once again, pshita. Right, after we've taught in the Reish, in the beginning of the Brita, that you need both, then obviously you can't go to the mikvah on Shabbos for the purpose of immersion, for converting. So Mark explains, you may have thought, if you just had the ratio of the Braita, that Rabbi Yossi thinks that the main part, the important part of converting is a Brit Milah. And the reason the ratio, he says, you can't go to the mikvah if we didn't see the Brit Milah done, is because it may have been done improperly, not for the sake of converting. But if we saw if the Brit Milah and it was done properly for the purpose of Judaism, then maybe we no longer need the tefillah and he can even immerse himself on Shabbos. So the chiddush is Rabbi Yossi needs both, and since this is a singular opinion, so it's a chiddush that Rabbi Yochanan says halacha is like the opinion that we need both. Fine. Amar Rava, uvdahava beir Rabbi Chiya bar Revi v'Rav Yosef. Sorry, the beir Rabbi Chiya bar Revi. So Rabbi says there was an incident involving Rabbi Chiya bar Revi. Rav Yosef matnei Rabbi Yoshai bar Revi, and Rav Yosef says also Rabbi Yoshai bar Revi was present. Rav Safa matnei Rabbi Yoshai bar Revi, and Rav Safa says a third amora Rabbi Yoshai was also present. That the kamei ger shemal v'otaval, a ger who claimed he had done brit milah and hadn't yet immersed himself, came before them. Amar le Yoshai kan ad lochav v'tbilach. So they said to him, fine, so wait a day and we'll immerse you and make you a ger. Shmamina Tlatzu, we can learn three things from this incident. Shmamina Gilzich Shosha, we can learn that since there were three rabbis present, you need to have three rabbis present when converting someone. Shmamina No Gilrat Shemul Veitabol, and we learn from here that simply doing Brit Milah was not enough, he also had to immerse himself. Shmamina Enugin Gilbalayla, we can also learn from here that they said wait till tomorrow because it's already nighttime and you can't immerse yourself at night. Maybe we can learn from here also that the three people who are involved need to be mumchim, they have to be rabbis because everyone here was a rabbi. No, you can't prove that from the story. It may have just been an incident that there were three people present, three rabbis. The reason we need three people present during the process of converting is because it's like a mishpat, it's like a judgment. You need a beit din. There's a lot of explanations in the Achronim why. One of the explanations is it's some kind of a committee that's, you know, accepting this person to be part of Am Yisrael. So you need some minor representation of Am Yisrael in the form of three Jews.